This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. Also by BlackStarLabs.com. You can save 10% on every order when you use the code FIT10 in the coupon section at checkout. And also by RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. High octane corrective exercise and performance enhancement at RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. Well, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 112. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first off, back with us this week is Jonathan Fass of acceleratedstrength.com and jonathanfass.blogspot.com. What's up, John?
I'd like to give a shout-out, if I could, Kev, to my mother, whose birthday was last week, and I wasn't on the show, so happy birthday again, Mom, and to my sweetheart Jen, because she got a promotion at work. So
nice,
two ladies in my life, so shout out to them.
Very cool. And we also have Tony Gentlecore, fresh off the Lord of the Rings marathon. What's up, Tony, from gentlecoretraining.com and the Boston Health Stop Up blog.
You need some new material, dude.
I do. That's true. I will agree with you on that. Then there's also Lee Peel, who still does not agree with my Mary Steenburgen effect theory, but does love Quantum Leap, so she's good in my house of avidityfitness.net. What's up, Lee?
That's your only redeeming quality this week.
Yes. We had a great discussion about Quantum Leap, an old United States television show, but we did not record it, so hopefully you all out there know what we're talking about. But we have a jam-packed show for you this week. We have a ton of mailbag questions, and we're also going to hit on some of the forum topics from this past week. First, I want to quickly mention that Jen Heath will be on the midweek show this week, so if you have any topics or questions that you want Jen and I to discuss, please send them to questions@thefitcast.com, or you can also send them via the little comments tab on thefitcast.com or the contact us section. Please do that. We will have the forums up, as we mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago, and things are booming. We do have a lot of great discussions, and I just want to mention that again. So if you haven't already, please head over to forums.thefitcast.com, and you can sign up and talk to everyone involved. And got to give huge props to Jonathan Fast now that he's back this week. He's been tackling tons of the questions in the injury and rehab section. So thank you, John.
No problem. My pleasure. Trying to help people out. That's all.
Yes, absolutely. We're trying to keep it nice and calm and civilized. We're just trying to have a good time in there and spread knowledge. And it seems to be going pretty well so far. And another thing I want to quickly mention, I have been getting emails from some people about doing online program design, and I want to also give the opportunity for everyone else on the panel to talk about this as well. I will begin to offer that very soon, but if you want to get in, I'm just going to start making a list of names. It's going to be first come, first serve. So if you want to send those in, just send them to kevin@thefitcast.com. And also, Tony, are you still accepting any more online clients? Or
oh yeah, absolutely.
How would they contact?
I try to limit my the people I get with because I'm busy with stuff at CP and whatnot. But absolutely.
How would people get in contact with you for that?
Oh, they can just email me at tjohncore18@yahoo.com.
Very good. And how about you, Lee?
Currently not taking on any clients right now.
And Jonathan.
Yeah, I got like one or two more slots that I could probably push.
Very cool. How would people contact you for that?
Same thing. I have a contact inquiry form right on acceleratedstrength.com. You just go there, you fill it out, and I get back to you.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about some mailbag stuff. We'll just head right into it. We're going to try not to jump into it because I say that way too much as I got a couple of emails saying that. So the first email comes from Butch. He says, Kevin, ... check out this story about one soldier's positive results with CrossFit. So there was an article on Ballad. It seems like it's a military website. And I will put the link in the show notes. But basically there was a soldier that used CrossFit to really get back into shape after I think it was a battle injury that she had after being deployed. The reason I want to kind of bring this up is that I think people are starting to email us saying trying to defend CrossFit, but again, we're not really attacking. I mean, there's definitely some merit to it. It's just not something all of us would use when it comes to our training programs. I don't know if there's anything anyone wanted to add to that, but I just thought I wanted to make sure that Butch got his email read.
You know, I think it's amazing it's such a pressure cooker of a subject. And I think, I mean, you know, there was just an article on T Nation that I looked at that was talking about CrossFit, and I thought that it nailed it really well. I mean, basically what the article was talking about, I think TC wrote it.
I think it was actually Chris Sugart.
Oh, is it? Okay. So it was Sugart. And, yeah. You know, he basically said, like, you know, CrossFit is a great way to get in shape. It's a great way to, you know, basically exercise. Is it perfect? No, nothing is perfect. But it really, the very basic fundamental argument is, do you want to be a specialist or a generalist? And most people, more or less, are probably going to be generalists because we're not really chasing any specific sports goal or activity goal. So if that's the case, I mean, I don't really see what the problem is saying, you know, it's kind of like CrossFit seems to get people that follow it seem to get angry, at least the vocal ones, when you say, well, you know, CrossFit won't be good for this, and then it kind of goes crazy. And to me, it's like telling, you know, a tennis player that their workout isn't good for a wide receiver. It's like, well, no kidding, it's not. So, you know, I think CrossFit is a great way to exercise. It's just not the end all be all of everything, and I think that's fair. There's nothing that's the end all be all of everything.
Yeah, we could debate this forever, but there's a couple of things I just want to again quickly mention about it, and it's actually a pretty inspirational story. The woman who was part of it was Sergeant Monica France, who had some back pain, and she was really kind of. She was mad because she couldn't, or disappointed she couldn't go back and be deployed again. So, amazing people who are part of the armed forces and anywhere where you're fighting around the world for whatever you're fighting for. And if you're listening to the show, just be safe. And that's pretty much all we can say. And thank you for your guarding our country, United States. I think that's kind of a. It's one thing that I know that I personally probably wouldn't be able to volunteer to do. It's very cool that for the people out there that do that. And I'm rambling on, so we're going to go to the next question from Colleen. She says, "Hi, y'all." Lee, can you actually say that? Hi, y'all.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Forget you.
Hi, y'all. I've been listening happily for about 5 months now and really enjoy taking your shows on my long runs for my triathlon training. I'm a complete convert to lifting like a guy and will never pick up a pink dumbbell again. I've been consistent in the gym with grabbing the larger weights for my workout. However, Sunday I tore my AC joint in a mountain bike crash during a race, and I'm in a sling and clavicle brace for about 2 weeks, so my lifting schedule is out of the window. I'll also have to be very careful when I come back. Since upper body is a no-go for now, can you suggest any lower body work I can do, keeping in mind that I lack the ability to put weights on my shoulders? I'll be on a bike trainer and exercise bike for a while. And again, that's Colleen. We'll throw that one to you, John, first, since you're the we're welcoming you back.
You know, I think first and foremost, when you're training after any kind of injury, you have to respect the injury. So with the AC joint, it's going to take a little bit of while, depending on the severity of the joint, to get full function back and full strength, because it's such a pivotal aspect of upper body movement. So what might happen is, depending on the intensity of the workouts, you may find that you're straining a little bit and putting some forces through the AC joint, even if you don't mean to. So I just wanted to throw that out there and you know, just be careful and mindful of when you're exercising how much intensity you're actually using, and make sure you're not you know, hurting yourself in the process. Other than that, I would still rather see her do like body weight type of exercises before she gets onto any machines. You've always got something like a leg press or one leg press, that sort of thing, but there are plenty of other things that she could do. Single leg squats and single leg deadlifts, like a king deadlift. An exercise that I really enjoy, she can do what's called a single leg runner's lunge, where you're taking a wide step back and then picking the knee up. And that's a pretty challenging exercise. So she can still use a lot of intensity with little or no weight for her body and still get some pretty good workouts. Depending on how heavy she's lifting or what type of workout she's done before, this may or may not keep her in the shape that she's in now, but it'll certainly help.
Lee, what do you think?
I think John gave great advice. I mean, you know, the thing is, if you're lucky enough to have that kind of an injury and you know, you're in a sling, you're not having to go to like a surgical area, it means that you have a really good chance of like a really, you know, good recovery going on with minimal time. So not to say like don't work out, just rest and recover, you can't do anything. But I would say to kind of just step back and really focus on the recovery, and if you can get in, you know, some bodyweight lead training, or you know, there's always kind of like box you know, step ups and you know, trying to do, you know, some more bilateral movements and things like that. That's great and all, but I personally would kind of back off a little bit. I'd back off a little bit, and I'd use this time to give a little bit of recovery. You know, and then after you get out of this, make sure to focus on not putting too much strain in that area. You know, watch the bench presses, watch just the dips. You know, maybe switch to more full range of motion movements for a while, and just, you know, kind of back off on things that really strain in that area. So, you know, I would definitely kind of heed this as a time to kind of, you hurt yourself, back off a little bit. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Tony, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, not much. I mean, all I'll say is that I like her determination of wanting to get back into the gym, and I can appreciate her excitement to get back into the gym as far as training. But certainly, I'll just reiterate what Jonathan and Lee said as far as just take those 2 weeks, take the time off, allow your body to recover. It's only 2 weeks, but certainly don't be in the mindset that you can't do anything. I mean, they've already given great advice. And I would even say when she's out of the sling and on her way to recovery, I mean, she could still train her arm to a degree. But certainly the lower body stuff, the body weight squats, you know, she has access to a glute ham raise, anything like that. So, but certainly, you know, I like her determination. I like the fact that she's not lifting like a girl anymore. That's kind of cool, for lack of a better term. I always find it funny when people say, "Oh, I want to lift like a guy now." Like, I just think it's a funny saying. Like, I don't really view it as like training like a girl or training like a guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, John.
John, you missed out.
I heard the
Well, it's better we had that than the infestation of crickets that we had on last week's show.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty bad. The next question comes from Hunter. Hey guys, great show. I've listened to almost all the previous episodes, and I've heard Trader Joe's mentioned many times. I am jealous every time I hear it because I live in Central Florida, and I don't think that we'll be getting one anytime soon. So my question is, what kind of alternative store is best in the absence of Trader Joe's? Sometimes it's hard to shop at the local supermarket packed full of delicious yet fattening foods. I haven't been able to find any, quote, greens products available in my area, and I was just wondering if we got another y'all had any tips for me regarding this. Thanks, and keep up the great work. So this is something that we who have Trader Joe's are very, you know, we're very privileged to be able to shop at such a great store. But there, I think it's worth talking about some other options that people have, and I think one that will pop up and I'm pretty sure is available in the South is Whole Foods. I think everyone is pretty much looked into that. Do you guys have any like tips on how to find like organic grocery stores near you? Or
I live in a small city. You know, we have about a population of about 200,000, and we have a varying amount of, there is Whole Foods near me, but there's not actually one in my city. We have an Earth Fair, which is kind of a local health food chain, but regardless of that, just your simple Harris Teeter or Lowe's or, I'm not exactly sure what's up north, but your average store these days is growing more and more in selections in organic and Whole Foods. And to some degree, when you're going into a health food store, you're kind of buying into a certain kind of a story, and to think that there's more health in there than there actually is. You can find a lot of those products in your general store. You just have to look a little bit harder for them. All the kind of flax or spelt, all those kind of special breads or whole grains, and even the organic frozen foods and organic vegetables and things like that, the majority of them can now be found in your average grocery store. There's not many around here anyway that you can't find. There's also fresh markets. I know that they're very large around the country, and just look a little bit more in your local stores. The only thing that's going to be an issue is if you're in a town that just has a Walmart or something, and even that, there are options that you do have. You know, just oats are everywhere, just regular rolled oats, you know, the scary Quaker man. I mean, he's everywhere, and you can find those. And rice, it's everywhere. You can always find, you know, good rices. Lean meats and fish, you can always find that everywhere. So you don't necessarily need a Trader Joe's, which is fun, but you don't necessarily need one of those in order to achieve a whole grains and a healthy diet. You know, there's local markets. Everywhere has local markets. And so you can really just kind of get a little bit more creative and realize that it doesn't have to be a specialty store in order for you to eat healthy.
Hunter, I'd say to take a trip over to the WholeFoodsMarket.com website, and there are about a dozen stores in Florida, so maybe you can find one that is near you. But I think one of the biggest issues is that whenever you go to, say, again, up, I'm talking about like Northeast, but when you go to something like a Stop and Shop or a Shaw's or a general supermarket, all the organic foods the prices are just jacked up incredibly, because they're touting it as this premium product that you have to pay a premium for. And that was the same case when I was in California. We used to go to, there was a Ralph's, which was pretty big out in the West Coast. And again, they just, you know, had a section for organic food, and all the prices were just jacked up incredibly. And you'd pay like a $2 premium for a product just to have it as organic. So yeah, you have to really consider that as well if you're going to be doing that. In terms of greens products, I think that I'd be surprised if any of us buy a greens product in store. I think we talked about last week how I picked up Trader Joe's greens product, and it was, you know, it wasn't anything earth-shattering. It's not like you can't, if you can't go online and go to like a bodybuilding.com or vitaminshop.com that has something like Greens Plus, or also T-Nation as superfood, you can get a basic product like that. I don't know, Tony, do you have any other thoughts?
No, I mean, Lee brought up a good point. And also, I'll mention, I remember when I read Lee's Fat Loss Troubleshoot, her first book, she mentioned that one of the biggest things that people can be cognizant of when they do shop, even if it isn't a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods, is just really stay at the perimeter of the store. Very rarely outside of a couple of things like oatmeal and stuff like that are you going to really have to go into the middle where the potato chips and the cookies and the cereal and all that stuff is. So more often than not, even if you are just going to a regular store like a Shaw's or a Stop and Shop or just a local store, just stay at the perimeter. That's where your produce, your meat, your meats and vegetables, fruits and vegetables are. So more often than not, you're just best off just staying at the perimeter.
John, how about you? Do you have any other tips?
Yeah, I mean, depending on where he lives, I mean, he's in Florida. I don't know if it's an urban area or suburban or whatnot. I have cousins that live in California that live on this enormous ranch, something like some like 80 acres, 60 acres, something in the middle of Central California. And they have their own vegetable farm that they grow all the produce that they use. They happen to be vegetarians, but it's just something to consider. I mean, it doesn't, especially in a climate like Florida, it should be pretty easy to grow things year-round if you have even a little bit of space, just to at least try to get some things that are fresh. When I have stayed with them and eat there, it's phenomenal. I mean, it's just great food all around. So that's another possibility. And then otherwise, like Lee had said, you know, farmers markets and local stores like that, if there's anything in the area, those are always good options too.
Okay, if no one else has anything else to add, we'll head to the next question. The next question comes from Eddie. I was just wondering if you have any tips or training parameters for people with asthma and general allergies. I never seem to be able to push myself in the gym as much as I would like to. I always seem to get really dizzy and nauseous and feel really lightheaded. In fact, I'm usually slightly winded just doing my first mobility drill during warm-ups. I have not been taking my inhaler because, if possible, I'd like to train myself to not need it. I also don't do too much energy system work just for this reason. Should I just increase my GPP and get my work capacity up before I worry about strength and hypertrophy? If so, should I follow a decreasing rest period type progression? I'm 5'10", 170 pounds, 9 to 10% body fat. I played sports all my life and never found a good solution. Any advice would be appreciated. And if you have any other nutrition or supplement ideas for this situation, that would be great too. And again, that's from Eddie. And I think one thing, I mean, that could be a good topic for discussion is just people working on their oxygen capacity or VO2 max with strength training, and you don't need to necessarily look at it as going into your, you know, doing cardiovascular work, which I think a lot of people still get tied up into. But Tony, what do you think?
I think he should be using his inhaler. That seems like that's a limiting factor right there. I like people trying to be a little bullheaded about stuff, I think if you have asthma and you need an inhaler to help with it, then you should be taking it. I mean, I had asthma as a kid. Luckily I outgrew it, but I certainly had to use it quite a bit. And I know we have a client at CP who, every now and then, he doesn't have to use it all that often, but he'll walk into the office and take a breath out of his inhaler. So, I would say first and foremost, don't neglect using your inhaler. I mean, you have it for a reason, and that's why. As far as stuff he can be doing, certainly, yeah, increasing your GPP would be a good idea. Energy system work's probably going to be a little bit out of the question for the time being, but you know, doing some, if he has access to, you know, sled pushes or anything like that, he can use a sled, maybe some light med ball stuff. You know, any little thing he can do to increase his work capacity, like you mentioned, like, you know, shortening the rest periods based off how he feels. I think that's he definitely has the right mindset, but certainly I think he's limiting himself by not taking his inhaler.
John or Lee, do you have any other anything else to add, or do you have any other experience with this?
I would add that you know, definitely the inhaler. Same thing. I've worked with people that have asthma. Sometimes I get asthmatic. I went through a period of about a year that I was getting very asthmatic and was carrying around an inhaler after, like, I don't know. But definitely with increasing cardiorespiratory, you want to be cautious about exercising anywhere that's like a dry or cold climate, because asthmatics have difficulty in warming their breath and keeping it moist, and that tends to trigger asthma attacks in most people, certainly in exercise-induced asthma. So try to work out when you're in warm environment, which could just be inside a gym versus like right now where it's like 20 degrees out. Outside of my apartment, if I were to go running right now, I'm sure I'd have trouble breathing. So, you know, moist air, warm air, warm up gradually. Don't try to go in and kill yourself right away. You do have to respect the fact that your body handles exercise and how you breathe a little differently. So you have to warm up a little bit more consistently in a longer period of time so that you're adapting slowly to the exercise. And that might also mean longer rest periods, all that kind of stuff, because ultimately what's going to happen is your energy abilities will be diminished because you can't replace oxygen fast enough. So you do have to be careful with how you're exercising. But otherwise, it can absolutely help you. You can increase your VO2 and your cardiorespiratory ability, capillarization of the body. So lots of good things come from exercise and in turn can help you to have a more efficient system and gas exchange when you're breathing and exercising. So best of luck. It can be tough.
Lee?
Anecdotally, I had really, really weak lungs growing up, and I constantly dealt with I got bronchitis like twice a year, and just really had like a bunch of breathing problems and allergies. I'm actually just a complete geek. And it wasn't until, and this is completely anecdotally, but it wasn't until I started to increase my interval training and really pushed the capacity levels and my comfort levels. Now, I did it safely. I did it with inhaler if I was sick, and I did it, you know, watching things, didn't do anything stupid, but I really tried and push my comfort levels and my thresholds, and really tried to increase it. It did leave me overall with better ability and breathing. To what degree that did it exactly, I don't know, because at the same time, I really increased my inflammatories. I really increased my fish oil and turmerics, and I basically really kicked things up a notch nutritionally. And since then, my allergies have decreased, and my asthmatic kind of symptoms have gone away. So I don't know. Research. There's been some showing of omega-3s helping with asthmatics, and a certain degree, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence towards interval training, aggressive, high interval kind of training towards helping asthma. But it's kind of rough. I recommend really focusing on rest and nutrition, but pushing things a little bit further. Not to say to hurt yourself, but don't let it stop you in a performance sense, and focus on more allergy type solutions, and you'd be surprised that clearing up the inflammation problems can really help with the breathing more so than you think. So that's just a little bit of anecdotal stuff that I don't have too much scientifically to back, but it's just what it is.
Very cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to be right back with some more questions from the mailbag. Stick around. Back with a mailbag. This question comes from Kyle. He says, "Hey guys, I have a question that I hope can be addressed on this show. I will be training a family friend while home on Christmas break. He's a Division I baseball prospect. He is a tall, thin left-hander, 16 years old, who would greatly benefit from 5 miles per hour increase in his fastball velocity and total body strength. I figured Tony might have some great insight. I planned on introducing him to soft tissue work, dynamic warm-ups, activation work, and proper form for deadlifting, etc. If you could expand on a sports-specific and injury prevention training protocol, that would be awesome. P.S. As a physical therapy student, it drives me nuts when guys preface their monster chest days by swinging 10-pound plates in shoulder death circles as their warm-up. This is fantastic because this is a college gym that was inserted by me. If their glenohumeral complex was Jenna Jameson, then she'd be taking it from all angles. Maybe it's just me. That's a good one. I think John liked that one.
Yeah, the Pink Dumbbell Award for best comment of the week.
Yes, Kyle.
Had to be.
That's what the where's our we need to get a theme music for that. Write that down. We will figure that out. Maybe some
kind of like the Academy Awards like soundtrack or something.
We could do that, or we could do some like 80s female sing like Madonna or something like that, but then we would get sued. But Tony, let's throw this to you first, and we'll also throw it around the circle. But obviously, baseball players, he's talking about putting 5 miles on his fastball. First off, how hard is that going to be?
For him, I don't think it'll be that hard. I mean, I could use 5 miles per hour on my fastball. I would like that. But for him, I don't think it would be that hard at all. One of the first things that we look at when baseball guys come through our facility is what we call GERD, which is glenohumeral internal rotation deficit. So you'll find that a lot of baseball players will have significant GERD in their throwing arm, mainly because they're going to be locked in the external rotation. And when that happens, the posterior capsule of the shoulder is going to kind of shorten as a preventive injury mechanism. And you'll see a lot of shoulder injuries and or elbow injuries because now the arm has a hard time decelerating itself, and the elbow is going to try to compensate for that. But John might know the specific numbers more than me, but you want to look at about a 40% GERD in the throwing arm, and when they lack that, you got to try to fix that. But and both Eric and myself have discussed it a little bit in some articles. So stuff like sleeper stretches would be very good. Prone internal rotations, anything like that to help with that GERD. We do program it, but we usually tell guys try to get like 3 sets in of 30 seconds throughout the day. But we'll also include that in the programming too. Other than that, I mean, at 16, if you're teaching him soft tissue work, dynamic warm-ups, activation work, showing him how to deadlift, getting him stronger, that's going to pay huge dividends. On top of that, I would say he needs to eat. at 16, you say he's tall and lanky and he's thin. Putting on a good 20, 30 pounds on the frame will definitely increase his fastball, that in and of itself. So it sounds like he's definitely in good hands. So, but I would just say, look at that GERD. And if there is a big deficit with that, then, throwing in some sleeper stretches and prone internal rotations and really being diligent with that soft tissue work would be a good idea. With our baseball guys, the only thing that we pay attention with them from a programming standpoint outside of looking at the GERD is, we don't do any straight bar pressing with them. So if they do any pressing, it's going to be a neutral grip, multi-purpose bar, lots of dumbbell work with a neutral grip, lots of rowing, and a ton of push-up variations. So we don't do any straight bar pressing. They do a lot of single leg work, as do most athletes should be doing. And we have also, for the past, I would say, 5 or 6 weeks, maybe about 2 months now, we've been doing a ton of dedicated med ball work with our guys. So they'll do their pre-work, they'll do their dynamic flexibility, their foam rolling, then for about a good 15, 20 minutes, sometimes even a half hour, they're doing specific med ball drills with intermittent mobility drills, activation drills in between. And then after that, they go into their actual strength training. So, we're looking to see some really good results from including that stuff in there. And but other than that, I mean, it sounds like he's in good hands. So, keep us updated on that, Kyle.
John, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Tony nailed it. The only thing that I have to add, I remember seeing a study. I want to say the Journal of Orthopedic Sports Physical Therapy, but that's probably a lie. But they looked at scapular stability before and after a game and a pitcher, and as you would imagine, there's a lot more instability after you've thrown 5-6 innings. And they looked at excursions of the scapula and abduction of the scapula and how it those muscles basically just weaken after throwing 80, 90, 100 pitches. So you certainly want to, performance increase is you'll always increase performance by looking to decrease injury rates. So don't forget, he's a physical therapy student already, and I'm very disappointed that he didn't write what school he goes to. But, don't forget that stuff too, and don't forget the preventative stuff also. But, I mean, Tony nailed it, that there's no way I could add to that. So,
Lee, is there anything you want to add?
Throw really hard.
throw really hard.
What am I going to add to that? Like, they rock.
Well, I don't want to leave you out, but if
let's just put this way. We have a saying especially with our high school pitchers, you know, train ass to throw gas. So, you know, train the hamstrings and glutes, and you know, good things will happen.
Yes, and if you want any tips on how to throw a great curveball, Kyle, just shoot me an email. Tony's seen it. It's dangerous.
Everyone, if we're going to go down this road, all right, you know, we do throwing at our facility.
Have you seen Barry Zito throw?
And Kevin made a bet with me when the spring comes on that he will give me an at-bat and then three strikes, whatever, that all I have to do is put the ball in play. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a pop-up, a ground ball, whatever. He's like, oh, you won't hit it.
Well, if you pop it up and I catch it, then it's...
I will crush you. Crush you.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. And
your curveball is like 40 miles an hour.
That's because I don't warm up before I do it. Like, I'll be doing this, like, randomly. Like, I'll throw two warm-up pitches, then I'll throw my curve, and it's dangerous. It just cuts at the end.
Okay.
It's like if Barry Zito had a better twin brother... That would be me.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't played baseball since freshman year of high school. It's been 8 years. I think I might pull a rookie. Good Disney movie. The next email comes from Brad. It says, I'm from Utah, and I've been training for a few years now, and I'm 235, about 20% body fat. My question is, how should I change workouts to get the best fat loss results? Been doing upper-lower splits for a while now, and I'm pretty strong. Should I change to a full body program or just keep my routine and add some extra cardio in there? And I'm, of course, changing my diet. Haha. Thanks, guys. I love your show. Makes me laugh out loud. Keep it up, Brad. And the first thing, Lee, I'm going to throw this to you, but the first thing, diet is not something to laugh about, guys. I'm serious. This is going to be one of the big factors that's going to be the major factor in determining your fat loss goal. So, Lee, what do you got?
Change your diet.
Okay.
Okay, you're at 20%. So when you're at that kind of a level, you really doesn't mean that you can't maximize your nutrition or anything, but you're still at a level in which that you should happily be dropping the fat. Your body shouldn't give you much of a difficulty doing so. Eat less and move more. As far as anything specific, this is a period of time when it's kind of you're running through the motions. When you're at like 20% and you know, let's say, I'm just going to imagine that Brad's goal is to have a six pack at some point, right? Because, you know, isn't that all our goals? So you want a six pack eventually, great. When you get to that point, you're going to have to dial things in a little bit more, and it's going to take a little bit more, you know, meticulous kind of additives. So when you're at this point, all you have to do is distract yourself enough to like not eat, you know, like have fun with the cardio, have a good time, you know, do different things. This is the time to kind of play around a little more. That doesn't mean you can't set like a, you know, a good, you know, progressive routine. But if this is like a period of time in which that you're finding yourself getting a little hungrier, getting a little bit bored, you're plateauing a little bit, this is a time to like, you know, go into the gym and have some fun. Try some stuff that you've been wanting to try. Throw in something that really challenges you, and you know, pick specific physical goals and go for them. And just really keep your interest up, because in truth, you need to not eat. Okay, like you need to eat less, and that's going to be really the bulk of the work is going to be done by that. And you know, to move more and to add more, you know, activity level and to be able to burn more calories. That's just an extra little additive. To keep your strength, it's an extra additive, but it has nothing to do technically with fat loss. If you keep that in mind, you can really just have the exercise and the activity and everything be for fun, for gaining strength, and for keeping your muscle. But at the end of the day, it should be about getting through this hard time, because getting from 20 to 10 is an area in which that a lot of people kind of give up, and they start to find themselves struggling and plateauing, and they'll bounce. Don't bounce. Keep it up and just eat less and have some fun. Cause, you know, just don't take it so seriously. Just saying.
Should we throw it out there for Brad to just give us a better idea of what he has been eating? It's just hard. I mean, I think this should be like a preface before anyone sends in emails that kind of fall under this category, to just give us as much information as possible. You can't give us too much information. I guess you could give us too much information, but it would be better to have that than not enough. So it's kind of hard to, you know, as Lee was saying, to make like a real hard recommendations, except, you know, generalizations. But, well, Lee, what do you think about full body versus like
versus
upper
split?
Lower split? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, personally, I think it depends on so many factors. How much time do you have? You know, what are you training for? Because when you're at like 20%, and let's just, I don't know, but I'm gonna assume that he's been training for a little bit. I don't really know, what is he training for? What is he training to do? I mean, obviously he's trying to lose fat, but at some point we have some sort of kind of alternative goal, or at least some sort of strength gaining progression. Where, you know, I personally, I don't put my clients on just a training program, because like we always work on something. We're always working on posture, or they have some specific goal that they're trying to achieve. Like, you know, for example, they want to try and increase some sort of performance in like a bodyweight exercise, like, you know, something like chin-ups or push-ups or something like that. A really good thing to try and progress when you're losing fat, because your body weight goes down. So it's something that you can kind of easily progress. And I know that sounds kind of simplistic, but it can be really encouraging to increase on your chin-ups while you're losing fat, you know, things like that. So I don't really know what he's trying to do. But when it comes to splits or full bodies, I really just kind of tailor that around how much time they have in a week. I do like putting at some point everyone on a full body kind of program. I think that it serves kind of certain purposes, and it's good for the body to get that kind of training in. But at the same time, if you were to never do it, I mean, so what? I mean, you know, some of the best strength gains that have ever been made is doing a bench press one day, a deadlift one, and you know, a squat the next, and that's it. You know, you just leave it at that, and amazing progress has been seen by that alone. So as far as if you have to do lower, upper, or if you have to do full body, if it's for fat loss or whatever, I don't think it really matters. I think it has to do with your personality and what's going to keep you interested, especially when we're talking about fat loss.
What do you think, Tony? Actually, no, John.
In your face, Tony.
Wow.
In your face.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hear that tomorrow. Okay.
Lee killed it, knocked it out of the park. And she's absolutely right. I mean, it's the dirty secret of working out. I mean, it's you just doing something really to support the diet. And in that sense, you're trying to maintain a muscle mass. Depending on if you're new to exercise or not, you may have some hopes in developing some good muscle and strength. But if you've been at it for a while, chances are you won't be. And so in that case, you're just really trying to support your metabolic rate and to maintain the strength. The best workout is the one that you're not doing. That's really all it is. So if you've been at an upper or lower split for a while, you're feeling like something's kind of stale, absolutely go to a full body workout. Change the way that you're exercising, change the types of intensities or lifts. Add some GPP, add some different types of intervals and cardio approaches, and you know, go to town with it. But in general, yeah, I mean, the exercise itself is not as important as just doing it. So as long as you are exercising and it's not completely ridiculous of a setup there, you're going to be fine.
What about you, Tony? You have any other anything to add?
Not much, other than, I mean, if I had to choose, I would say if we're talking strictly fat loss, I would choose a full body routine. But really, I would choose any routine that's going to allow you to train more, the most often, without it being a burden on your life to the point where like your quality of training just goes to shit. I mean, I don't want people going to the gym thinking, oh, I gotta go to the gym today. You know, then they go and they don't really get much accomplished. So I mean, it's pretty much on the lines of what Jonathan just said. Like, what, you know, the best routine is one that you're not doing. But, you know, if I had to choose to be full body, but certainly I would, you know, the more often you get into the gym and, you know, you're moving around, but without it being a burden, then that would be the best approach.
If you do full body, are you allowed to bench 3 times a week?
No. If it were you, you would bench.
He's got a problem.
Yeah, you bench 5 days a week.
Yes.
You got a problem, Kevin.
I'm actually looking into therapy options. That might be a career path too, therapy for people who want to bench too much. I'll look into that. The last question comes from Steve. And this is a very timely question because I just had an argument with someone, or I will say a discussion about this with someone. I think it was actually with Brian St. Pierre with Tony, but Steve says, "Hey guys, I have a quick question. I tend to get up to pee often during the middle of the night. Must have a small bladder or something, or maybe I'm just taking the drink plenty of water thing to the extreme. I was wondering, is there anything that I can do while I'm up to help recovery or muscle gains, fat loss, etc.? I know sleep is important. It's not like I'm gonna get up in the middle of the night on purpose to do this, but since I'm already up, is there anything I can take advantage of being up? From what I understand, your body is in a catabolic state while you're sleeping. I've heard taking some BCAAs or whey protein in the middle of the night would be good, especially if I had a hard workout that day, but just wanted your guys' opinion. Thanks, Steve." And the reason this is such a great question is I would love to go around the panel, and I want a yes or no. If you wake up in the middle of the night to pee, I'm going to say yes. Tony,
Oh yeah.
John, Lee.
That's art.
Was that a yes?
Oh wait, are you asking me to eat or are you asking me if I wake up and pee?
If you
You
wake up
wake
and
up.
pee.
Oh yeah, I piss every night.
Okay, so I think the discussion we gotta have here is, and again, we'll go around and discuss this. Is it worth someone, popping some BCAAs or making a shake or pre-making a shake? I forget. It might have been. I was talking with a client at CrossFit Performance about this, but he said like Chad Waterbury actually pre-makes a shake every night before he goes to bed, and he might drink it, he might not. If he wakes up in the middle of the night, it's just nice to have that there. And we'll go around. We'll start with Tony.
To be honest, I have done that a couple years ago when I went through a pretty hefty bulking phase. I always eat a meal before I go to bed, like an hour before I go to bed. It's like our staple. We tell all our kids to eat this. I think pretty much all of us do some sort of cottage cheese slash whey protein, peanut butter, fish oil concoction, what have you. I'm always we always tell the kids that getting that meal in before bed is a good idea, especially for the ones who are trying to put on weight. And in the past, yeah, I've done it where, I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. I just have a shake next to my bed that, and so when I get back into my bedroom, I pound it, go back to sleep. So, I think it's absurd when I hear about guys setting their alarm to wake up at 2 a.m. to eat. I don't get that. But, I don't do it now. I mean, I don't see myself, I'm not losing weight or, my recovery isn't that bad. So, I mean, I don't do it now, but it's not to say that I haven't done it in the past.
How about you, John?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I mean, I kind of think that it's somewhat much to do about nothing. I mean, certainly, you don't want to starve yourself before you go to sleep and then starve throughout the night, but I don't think it's of, essence to kind of prepare a meal in the middle of the night and wake up. And I've heard stories of people doing that, of actually setting their alarm to eat and things like that. I would love to see if there really is any kind of difference between, just having a normal eating cycle and going to sleep for, the 8 hours, 7 hours, or whatever, versus someone that would wake up in the middle of the night and what actually occurs. But in my mind, I mean, if you wake up and you're hungry, so eat. And if you're not, don't worry about it. If you want to eat, about an hour and a half before you go to sleep or something like that, a very small meal, then, that's fine. But I don't think it's something to really be worried about. And as far as recovery, honestly, it's nothing replaces sleep. So even though it's probably not the answer that he was looking for, it's really a tough question to field, because when you're missing sleep, it just does so much to the body that really anything else that you try to do to combat that is just not going to be as effective. So I would probably recommend taking a close look at his water intake and seeing what he might be able to do to calm that down, because we all wake up in the middle of the night to pee sometimes, but when you're doing it routinely once or twice a night, then either there's something wrong with the diet or I guess probably worse, there might be something actually wrong with your system, and that's something to get checked out. So
Lee, can I make a point really quick before Lee goes?
Yes, you can, Tony.
Just to kind of go along with what John just said about sleep. I mean, he's right. Nothing really replaces sleep, but even that, if we're going to get nitpicky about it, like quality sleep, like hours before midnight, it's been shown in some research that people who get 8 hours of sleep going to bed before midnight, meaning, they go to bed at 10 and get up at 6, do much better with recovery than those who go to bed at like 1 a.m. and get up at 9 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So like getting your 8 hours of sleep or what have you, before midnight, as opposed to going to bed at 1, 2, 2 o'clock in the morning, seems to be a factor with some people as far as how well they recover.
Good point. Lee, what do you got?
There's nothing wrong with if you're already awake, with taking something in. I mean, it can't hurt, and it's not going to hurt you. It's not, but at the same time, if you go right back to bed, not going to hurt you either. And there are some things to be said about taking in something like whey, when you're, I think it would be a smarter to take in something like a casein or a slower digesting protein. I don't know why you'd want to raise your insulin levels up like that, right when you wake up and then try and go back to sleep. That could possibly have, I wouldn't say it would have negative effects, but I don't really know what I think about that. But regardless, I don't think that it's a bad thing to get up and have yourself a little bitty snack, or I guess you could take some branched-chained amino acids. But I think that it's more important to get the recovery and the sleep in than to worry about waking up and eating something. I think it's absolutely stupid and ridiculous to set your clock to eat. I remember reading, it's such a popular like celebrity trainer thing to do. I remember reading, was it Hillary Swank when she was doing, I think it's when she was doing the Million Dollar Baby, her trainer had her get up at 2 o'clock every morning or in the middle of the night to eat like, I think it was something like 9 egg whites and drink like a whey protein shake. It's ridiculous, stupid shit. It's just ridiculous, and I think that that's just silly. If you get up and you have to use the bathroom. On the flip side, though, to maybe solve the guy's bathroom getting up problems, stop drinking so much water before bedtime. If you're getting up to the point to where you're sending in a question about it, you may be waterlogging yourself, and you may be taking in a little too much, or perhaps throwing in some sort of a natural diuretic before around that time. So maybe try and decrease your water intake so close around bedtime if it's such a problem for you, because I mean it to get up once to be kind of half awake and use the bathroom, not so bad, but if it's becoming something to where if you're sending in a question about it, I wonder how much you're getting up or how much of a problem for you it actually is. So you might want to just decrease your water a little bit around bedtime, and it might help solve the problem overall.
Fair enough. So yeah. I think that's got a couple of great angles for everyone on there, and hopefully, Steve, we can give you some options, and maybe you should just drink a little bit less water. But I don't see, like, I have woken up in the middle of the night every single night for the last probably like 5 years and peed in the middle of the night. I can't remember the last time I didn't do that.
Yeah, I'm always going. I mean, but it's always just a really quick thing for me. Like, to be honest, like when I get up and do it, I'm like half awake and I just crash back into bed. It's not something that wrecks my night. I know people that it does, but it doesn't wreck mine. So I don't know. To me, to eat and all that, I would wake up more, and it would take forever for me to go back to sleep. That's just me.
All right. So I think we will move on to our forum topic. So we're going to take one more quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll wrap this show up. We'll be right back. Rebecca for the forum discussion, and the topic that we're going to talk about this week is really what makes a good and a bad trainer slash coach. And we had a discussion that came up on the fitness industry section of the forum, and username Hooked just wanted to start a discussion on really why we seem to have so many bad trainers at, you know, gyms like World Gym and I think in Gold's Gym, like those people that kind of get their overnight or their weekend certification then start training people. And, you know, before we get into our discussion, I think it's very cool that we talk a little bit about, you know, what we've seen in the industry. Tony, you did a blog post about this recently, actually. Did you not?
Did I?
Shoot, I think you wrote about Sports Club LA or something.
Oh. I mean, just to have a little backstory, like I briefly saw the discussion on the forum about, I think the premise was the guy said some trainers just don't realize how bad they are, or
correct.
They just don't have enough background or knowledge or information or what have you. They just don't realize that how. Yeah, bad they are. And I think I just briefly discussed how I got a PM on TE Nation from a former colleague of mine when I was at Sports Club LA. And he's like, oh, you know, dude, I didn't realize TE Nation existed. And, you know, he's like, I can't believe how bad it used to be. Basically, all he's been doing for the past year is reading, which is what most trainers should be doing. You know, I think he said he's going to try to come out to the facility at one point soon. But I know we had another trainer come maybe about 2 months ago who it was actually the funniest comment I've heard. He basically came up for about 2 days and observed us, just kind of what we did. And I'm warming up the train and he walks up. He's like, dude, like, I didn't realize how much of a douchebag of a trainer I was until I came here. And I just laughed my ass off. Like, I was like, oh my God, I put it up on the board, actually. It was like quote of the day. But I mean, I don't make it a habit of calling people out. And, you know, I mean, there's half the times where I feel like I'm the stupidest trainer on earth too, you know, but at the same time, you know, I make it a point of surrounding myself around like-minded individuals. And I make it a point of, you know, reading and keeping on top of things. And, you know, a lot of trainers just don't do that. They get their weekend certification and they feel that that's all they need to do. And, you know, there was another trainer when I used to work at Sports Global A who literally felt that he already learned all that he needed to know about fitness. And I just kind of like turned my head, and in my head, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, there's people in this industry who have been doing this for 20 plus years, Mike Boyle being one of them, who he is constantly changing his opinion on things, changing his programming, you know, admitting when he's wrong on certain stuff. And yet this guy reads two books and thinks he's learned all he needs to learn about fitness. And I mean, that's the mindset a lot of these trainers have. And it's mind-numbingly retarded. Like, I just can't comprehend having that thought process. And it's very, very, very unfortunate, because it really puts a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths as far as the personal training / strength coach industry. You know, like, yeah, there's a ton of great trainers out there and a ton of great strength coaches out there. But, you know, at the same time, and it could be said about any profession, you know, there's a lot of bad ones too. And more often than not, it's the bad ones that tend to give to get the most notoriety and make it to the point where, you know, people just have a bad taste in their mouth, and it's very, very unfortunate.
Do you think some of this, though, has to be, you know, some of the, I don't know if you want to call it blame, but some of that has to be put on the certification authorities as well? Because, like I said, I took my CSCS about 2 months ago or a month and a half ago, and, you know, it's I had to learn a lot of things that, you know, I tried as hard as I could to de-learn in the last couple of weeks, because they, you know, they still are, seems to me like they're using information that was the standard 10 years ago, 15 years ago, which, you know, is not something you would bring in today's cases when there's so much more information so
Well,
many more.
it's just tough to say because I mean you have the MSCA and you have ACSM
Yeah.
and you have ACE and you have I mean I to me the gold standards are NSCA and the ACSM. I mean that and I would put NASM up there too. I think those are organizations that have a very, very good reputation. They have a lot of people who back them up. They have a lot of people who write for them. They have, you know, that tends to be our gold standards. But it's just these certain certifications that you can literally get online right now and pay to get certified. You pay $49 and you're a certified trainer. And that's just pathetic. You know, is it a factor we have to hold these organizations accountable? No, I don't think so, because we've always said this before on the show that getting a certification is just your foot in the door. You know, I mean, what you do with that certification is on you. Like, you have to make it a point to, you know, seek out, you know, trainers and coaches in the area whom you have respect for and whom you have, like, you know, follow their same philosophy. You have to take it upon yourself to, you know, if you are training somebody and you don't know, and they come to you with an issue and you don't know the answer, you know, to realize that it's out of your scope of practice and to seek people who can give you the answer or to seek it out yourself. I mean, people have to take accountability in their own actions. Like, I'm not a big fan of blaming an organization or blaming this person. Like, they have to take, you know, they have to be accountable of their own actions.
John, do you think that things like internships and mentorships are a big thing? Because obviously you got to spend, I think you got to spend a whole semester with Bill Hartman and Mike Robertson.
Yeah. I mean, without question. But it does kind of, I mean, we talked about that on a few FitCasts before, and I think it's a fantastic idea. The other side of the coin, though, is that who are you taking your internship with, your mentorship? I actually mentored a trainer at one point. It was for her certification. I think it was WITS or something. They do that where they, as part of your training process, you actually have to go work with a trainer and learn from them. Hmm. And that's a pretty good idea in theory, but then you kind of think, well, where are you actually going?
Exactly.
You know, so you could be doing your internship with Joe Putzo trainer, you know, out of Gold's Gym or Bally's or whatever, and I'm sure there are great trainers in both places. I just never seen it. But you know, and so then it's kind of like the blind leading the blind. So I think that the industry has a long way to go. And there's a lot of politics involved too. My boss at Rutgers and I were talking about it a few months ago. There's been some kind of drive. I think it's in California where they're looking to make like a state certification of trainers, where you to be certified by the state, much like, you know, a physical therapist would be board certified by the state, you know, nationally certified, so that you're actually, you know, board certified practitioner. In theory, that's great, but then what happens to things like the NSCA and the NANA? You know, there's way too much money involved. So stuff like this is a long ways out, unfortunately. And then it still boils down to, you know, who's actually determining what a trainer is supposed to be competent at, and what, you know, what maybe they're not being trained in that others could argue is important. One thing also that you said about the NSCA, I mean, I think that organizations like the NSCA and the ACSM tend to be considered the higher level organizations, because they're very deep into like research, so you can at least point to their recommendations and say these are recommendations that are backed by research. But just like, you know, what you discovered too, even all that information you kind of look at and you go, I'm not sure if I believe this, or I'm not sure if this is the most accurate information, and that boils down to the problem of research too. I mean, you just you really have to look at it as with a discerning eye. I mean, you could find literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of research papers supporting the concept of high intensity training, because it works, but it works for a specific type of population at a specific time. And the more recent research that may be a little bit better research is finding that there are differences between one set versus multiple set training regimens. But all the research that was done before it said, no, all you need is one set for the rest of your life. And we're kind of figuring out that that's not the case. But if you're going to, make up a certification and you're going to put information, well, that's you know, for example, that's a huge part of the literature. And so, you know, you can kind of argue and justify anything that you would say is important. So we've really, as an industry, got to sit down and kind of decide what's true, what's not true, what things have we done before, or what before, you know, are we kind of looking towards and moving into now, and really get a clue about what we're all trying to accomplish and talk about.
That's an interesting point, but I mean, who's going to do it?
Yeah, and that's the problem. I don't think it's a huge task, and there are many different arguments, and there are a lot of different opinions, and that's the problem. So you could say, you know, oh, okay, I don't believe A, B, and C out of the NSCA, but go tell that to Bill Cramer. It's not
exactly
going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, and for people in the audience that don't know, Bill Cramer is like the man of the NSCA. The guy's resume reads like, I mean, it's reads like a novel. You know, I mean, it's incredible what he's accomplished. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, any research in general. And it's funny because I was just talking about to my class at Rutgers about this. You know, you always want to stay on top of the literature, but anyone that does research will tell you that something that's just published today was probably performed about at least a year ago, if not 2 years ago, between actually doing the research and doing the testing, writing it all up, submitting it for publication, then when it finally gets published. So that's 2 years old in the least, if not more. Then you've got the textbooks that are based on that research. That's going to be at least 5 to 10 years behind what the most current stuff would be saying, the research that's just concluded right now. And then what we do in the field is probably way ahead of the research, because no one's going to do research on something if they haven't thought about it. So you tend to do things in the field first. The research kind of catches up to it, and the textbooks lag way behind that, and they wait to say something until there's lots of evidence. So people are getting certified and getting, you know, and basing their expertise on a textbook that in the least is probably 5 to 10 years old, as far as current literature. So,
Lee, what do you think?
Well, I think John covered it as far as the industry standpoint goes, and yeah, I think that it was pretty much dead on there. As far as taking it upon yourself, you know, the thing is it's like with anything. If I could take it to like kind of an avenue of looking at it, like, for example, let's take music. You can either be happy and content with the music that you're given by public radio and by MTV and by VH1, or you can decide that that's just not enough for you, that you want to dig deeper, and then you decide to discover, you know, more lower grade, non-mainstream indie bands, and then take it even further to non-label bands, et cetera, et cetera. It's how far you want to dig on a subject. And that's with anything. Decorators, how far do you want to deep? Music, how far do you want to dig? Like, and it's with any single thing that you want to become a quote-unquote expert on. It's how far you're willing to go and how much information you're willing to take in, and how hard you're willing to work. Do you want to be mediocre or not? Some people, I truly do believe, don't understand that they can take it to that next level. And it's, you know, I think that if you really want to take it there, you could go with schooling and say that, you know, we were kind of learned, read the book, memorize question, read the book, memorize questions, answers, and that's it. It doesn't go much further than that. You aren't really taught so much, and, you know, with general education to really think and to express until you get to kind of more of that college level. And even then, it's pretty book questions, you know, and it doesn't really make you want to really dig deep and question into things. So I think that when you're getting into something like becoming a trainer, you've got to push yourself beyond those boundaries of how much it is that you want to know. How much of it is your fault that you don't know what you know? It's all your fault that you don't know what it is that you know. But are you the type of person that has that kind of mindset? Not everybody does. And I do think that people don't. I think the problem comes is when people know that you can dig deeper, people know that it does exist, that the information is out there, and then if you work hard for it, and then they decide not to, and they take that easy way out, and they decide to try and just cheapen it, that is when I personally get angry at the industry or get angry at it kind of an individual's answer to that, because you know better, you should know better, you know that the information out there, you're just choosing to close your eyes to it because, well, that's just too hard. And that I find to be the true killer, in my opinion, that and ego. Because the majority of the people that run the certifications, that are on the boards that do the information, once they get a hold of some sort of theory, some sort of study information, something that proves what it is, and it has to do with something of their brand or something of their product or just their ego, because they don't want to have to turn and say, oh, well, turns out I was wrong. They don't want to say it. They don't want to say I was wrong. Their egos can't handle it. And, you know, egos and laziness are the number one killer of any industry, training, or it does not matter. But in this particular, it's the ego and it's the laziness that are going to get you in the end. If you can swallow your pride and say, you know, there's things that I wrote an article, I think, a year and a half ago about the importance of high interval training and depleting body fat. And particularly I geared it towards females. And it was at the time, I thought it was the best article I'd written. It was great. You know, I got lots of, you know, opinions on it and everyone was happy, pat me on the back. And now I look at it and I cringe, absolutely cringe, because I'm telling too many generalized people to do a specific type of training that come to find out, you know, doing that kind of training for certain people, bye-bye period, hello, messed up hormones, and all kinds of problems that can come into it. And it's, you know, I gave a generalized answer to something that should have been a depends kind of situation. Does that mean I'm, you know, that now all my information's worthless because I had one wrong statement a year and a half ago? No, I correct it and I make sure that my corrected information tries to get out there. And I don't let my ego suffer because of it. And I think that that's what kind of sets people apart is being willing to say, yeah, I was wrong, or more information has come out, or I've seen this information that's come and guess what? You know, there's a better way to go about it, and there's a better method to apply something. And I think that if you take that kind of a road, you're going to be better off. But I do think that to some degree, do people mean to have an ill intent? No, I don't think so. But I do think that it's all on you, and it's how much you want to progress forward and try and keep educating yourself.
So I think it's pretty fair to say that, you know, the responsibility falls on the individuals. You know, and the individuals are what make up the industries. So it's gonna be tough. Like, there's so many people that once they get their certification, you know, that's all they need to know. They got it. That's all they're gonna do. It's gonna be. I don't see how there's like really an answer for this. It's just us.
I don't think there is. I mean, look at the government. You know, look at our nutritional guidelines, for example. There's so much information and it's so conclusive, and while they're working on it and they have some people that are, you know, redoing the pyramid, what it's going to come out, was it 2009, at the end of January, I think that's when it's supposed to come out, it's supposed to change, I can't remember exactly, but you know, and the thing is, the people that they selected between a certain group of, you know, guys that got around, they said, hey, we want this guy to help run it, we want this person to help run it, it's going to come out, and knows what the hell it's going to be. And there's too many cooks in the kitchen. There's too many people that seem to think that there's an opinion on certain things that there's just not opinions on. Certain things don't have opinions to it. Some things that we've now determined that are pretty good and factual. We don't want to see that. We don't want to see those kind of things. And we also can't deal as people with the word depends. Sometimes things just depend. This kind of training, not always good for you. These kind of cardio activities, not always good for you. There's some people that need to be doing certain kind of things, and there needs to be an understanding that to make blanket statements of, yeah, you want to get into shape, well, you do this kind of training and you do this and make sure to have your protein here and make sure to do that there, and that's the end of it. And it's not always the end of it. It's not always that black and white. And until people understand to put depends in their vocabulary and really see things on an individual basis, but try and set up a protocol that's fitting towards that, we're not going to get anywhere. And there's too many egos and there's just too many cooks in the kitchens. And I don't see it, not to be a pessimist, but I mean, it's with anything in this country. It's just too hard. It's just too hard to deal with that many people and that many people's opinions.
I think this is something that we'll probably bring up on a future episode, but we are running kind of late, so we're gonna.
Kevin, if I could just interrupt for 1 second.
Absolutely.
I really do have to call Lee out on something I totally disagree on. There is no way that MTV and VH1 plays music, dude. No way. And I think that you owe our listeners a public apology for misleading them, because there is, I haven't seen music on MTV since 1989. So,
you know, at like 2 o'clock in the morning, dude, they'll play.
And they even shut down TRL.
Yeah, right. You know,
wow. Did they really?
Yeah,
that's horrible. I mean,
I was I was like, really? What did I say? Giant coming at me?
Yeah, no.
I was like ready, and I was like,
yeah. You liked how that I set that up there?
I had my finger on the bleep button.
That in.
I'm full of it. I was trying to relate to General America because I don't even watch the shit, so I don't know.
It's actually pretty surprising that about 40% of our traffic comes from outside the United States.
Really?
So people, we might have to talk about. I don't know any other music channels in the world.
I don't know. They have MTVs everywhere.
Oh, no.
MTV Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have...
Deb China.
It's good trance music in Europe.
isn't Fuse a Canadian channel?
Is that where that song, that boy song came from?
No.
Oh. Okay. If people can figure out what we're talking about, I will send you a free sweatshirt.
Dude, every week I try to figure out what you're talking about.
Boy.
Maybe we should just make that song our closing song out to today's show.
Okay. Take pictures. Okay, yeah, if you can email our...
One of these weeks I'll send it to you and we can...
No, just send me the name of the song. I'll see if I can find it on iTunes. And we will do that. So it might be playing us out now. You can check out Tony Gentlecore at the Boston Herald Step Up blog. Also at gentlecoretraining.com. He also has his log going on at T-Nation in his locker room. Jonathan Fass, Avidity, AccelerateStrength.com.
Yes, AvidityFitness.com.
.com/org. John, your site is AccelerateStrength.com and jonathanfast.blogspot.com. Very cool article on touch-ups, which was I liked.
Oh, thank you.
People should check that out. He does blog. I'm serious. If you check, you just have to check like once a week. He'll post something.
Yo, I was so busy. I don't even want to hear about it.
Really? What were you doing?
My last class was a week ago. I finished my last ART course. I'm full certified.
Nice.
Yeah. I got a 99 on the test.
Wow.
Yeah. I had the high score when I left at about 10:30 in the morning. Someone had tied me, an athletic trainer from North Jersey had tied me. I'm pretty sure someone probably got 100 by the time the day was done, but I screwed up on the genu articularis.
Ah!
Yeah.
That's what it always is.
Every time.
That burned me because I was like, dude, that's money. That's my muscle. I got that one.
Come on.
I was so ticked. Yeah.
You're weak.
That's where I lost my point. I lost my tension. So pissed.
I forgot to ask Tony. Tony, is there anything coming up on your blog? Anything
that you're feeling? I might. Well, I know this has to deal with our little secret project or whatnot, but I might be switching my blog over to the FitCast.
Oh, we shouldn't mention that yet. We can mention that now. That's all right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I'm in the process of possibly moving my blog over to the FitCast, and which would be the case, I would
be
probably blog more often. What's that? And I won't be censored. Yes.
So you can see reactions to
I
two girls,
say,
one cup.
What was Carlin saying? Shit, fuck, ass, motherfuck. What was the other ones that?
No, we're not going to say the other ones.
I'm not gonna say. Wait, dude, are you serious? They actually censor you on that blog?
Kind of.
I've read your stuff, dude.
It's my own. Like, I've gotten in.
Look at these hot chicks.
My blog on there is one of the more popular blogs on the Herald, so I get decent traffic there. But there's been a couple of cases where they've pointed the finger at me and said, "Dude, you gotta tone it down a little bit." But
the man,
I kind of push the envelope a little bit, but they're good to me over there. So, but yeah. But certainly I might be switching my blog over to the Fitcast, and in which case it'd be a, you know, I could do what I want with the blog and, you know, put more pictures of hot chicks up and stuff.
Yes. 2 weeks from today, Tony and I will divulge what that thing is. We're going to wait 2 weeks, though.
Stay tuned. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, 24 is on a little bit. Lee, can you tell people what's going on? What's up at avidityfitness.net? I saw you have a new blog post, and we might not be hearing as much from you in the future. What's up with that?
I'm on it. Just, you know, it's a very short hiatus. Just, you know, a little short. I'm doing some training right now. I'm on a super secret project myself, and but I'm doing some local work right now that's just really involved, and it takes some traveling, and I'm not gonna have the time to do that, and I have some new launches of some things coming up, and a new site launch is coming up, which hopefully, you know, a lot of the Fitcast people will enjoy, because there's going to be some really great featured articles on there. But in the meantime, you can just watch my 07 video that I have on my blog and await my return. It's a good video. It's a good song.
Oh, that song's awesome.
Song's awesome.
Garden State for the win. All right, and you're also on Facebook now. Do you want people to add you?
I am. I'm on Facebook. You can.
I was one of her first friends.
You could pretty much blame Tony for that.
I'm totally first in that shit. I first did it.
Wow, really? Okay. So yeah,
how do you
I'm
feel
on Facebook.
About that?
please add me and. I don't know. I don't have much up yet. I kind of stole from my MySpace profile, and I just kind of moved everything over. So I need to. It's really out of date. So I need to update it. But I'm on there, and so add, because I like having.
John, you on the Facebook?
You know what? I'm like an old fogey, and I just go onto Facebook, and I'm like, I just don't get it. I'm sticking strong. I have a Facebook. And I just don't even, like, it's there, and I don't want to get sucked into it, and people, like, friend request me, and I don't even, I have, like, a bunch of friend requests.
Oh, John, you know my rule when it comes to Facebook, right?
What's that?
Like, I actually blogged about this, like, dudes who try to friend me, and their profile picture is a shirtless picture of themselves.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
I say no to that.
That was a good blog. I saw that.
Otherwise, it's welcome for a woman, right?
Oh yeah, unless her name is Jessica Alba, then
Bueller.
Yeah, or Simpson.
Jessica Biel.
Yeah. But, name's Jessica.
Yeah. So that's my rule of Facebook.
Yeah, I mean I'm on MySpace, and I just keep that, you know, something to keep in touch with my friends with, and I just sit there on Facebook, and I'm just like, I just don't get, like, people, you know, like my girlfriend will send me, she's like my only friend on Facebook because I just don't want to have a Facebook, and she'll send me some, like, you know, Hello Kitty says hi present. I'm like, I don't even get this. So I just
I feel the exact same way. Like the first time I got on there, like someone threw a cookie at me, and I was like, why the fuck are you throwing a cookie at me, and what does that mean? No, I'm with you, but I had to do it. I was forced, and so guess what, you're gonna get forced to do it too.
Man, see, that's the thing. I got forced into it, and now I'm just looking at it going, I just don't get this.
You gotta do it.
You know what would be cool is if we could get the that sound for 24, and like the following takes place between episode and all.
Seriously, it's like three episodes.
Oh, Jack Bauer!
By the way, Kevin, Eli Manning has 220 yards and 3 touchdowns.
I've seen this. He is making me a happy man.
And me too.
Yes, for everyone involved. So you can check out Lee at avidityfitness.net. And... that is it. We will be back next week. There's a chance we might have Cassandra Forsyth on next week, so just keep an eye out in your email box and sign up for the newsletter. If you haven't already, you can follow Lee and I on Twitter at twitter.com/ournames. And that is about it. Thanks again for listening. Check out the forums at forums.thefitcast.com. Subscribe through iTunes. And until next week, We're going to go watch Jack Bauer save the world one more time.
Longest episode ever.